This is Bob Fetrakis with The Other Side of the News, brought to you by thefreepress.org. WCRS Community Radio 98.3 and 102.1. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Fetrakis in the studios at WCRS. And my good friend Cliff Arnebeck, attorney at law, famed for his work in uncovering the ludicrous results of the 2004 Ohio election and pressing forward in various legal actions against what appears to be a machine bent on stealing 5-6% of the vote in every election. Cliff, we just had a vote in Wisconsin, and once again, the universal laws of statistics were suspended in U.S. territory, and the results, unpredictably outside the margin of error, favored the Republican Party. Does this surprise you?
No. This has become a consistent pattern. And the evidence of this is most clearly demonstrated by the work of Richard Charnin, whom you interviewed recently. And this guy is a world-class mathematician. And when I say that, I mean he's worked in the aerospace industry at Grumman in New York. He's worked in Wall Street investment firms doing mathematical modeling, where it's essential that you get your numbers right, because a lot depends on it. So he's not someone who just entered this field and is claiming to be an expert in mathematical analysis. This is his life work. And since 2004, he's been focusing on this problem of the exit poll discrepancy. And he has discovered that the Roper News Organization has filed the unadjusted exit polls all the way from 1988 to 2008 at the University of Connecticut. And the significance of this is that previously we've been looking at screenshots. And we haven't had the actual, for sure, official unadjusted exit polls. Now we know there's a place where these things repose, and we can refer to that material, and we can ask a court to take judicial notice of what that information is, because it's there. It's official. The official unadjusted exit polls. And what those polls show is a consistent pattern of election shifting, vote shifting, since 1988. And interestingly, as you and I know, because of some work that's being done on this problem by one of our leading investigative journalists and writers, this date, 1988, coincides with the conversation that Karl Rove had with his technical people, his campaign people, after the 1988 Iowa caucus, in which George Herbert Walker Bush placed third to Pat Robertson, because of Pat Robertson's support among the evangelicals.
Absolutely.
And behind Bob Dole. So this was a very embarrassing situation, and Karl Rove turns to his three right-hand men, Tom Lindhorst, Barry Jackson, and Mike Connell, and says, we have to do two things. We have to get the evangelicals on our side, and we have to get technology on our side. And lo and behold, in the New Hampshire primary, following that conversation, there are some miraculous variations from the exit polls, or the exit polls and the pre-election polls.
Well, the last tracking polls before the election essentially showed that Dole was winning by around 8 points, and then he ends up losing by 9 or so. So it was a miraculous 17-point shift.
Yeah. And the important thing about this, Bob, to me, is that what it underscores is that this is not a Republican Party conspiracy at the outset. This is a Karl Rove operation.
Working with the former CIA director who in his tenure overthrew governments in the Third World using technology and other techniques and trained to do so. These are known as, quote, benign operations. They're not bloody coups. They were preferred by the CIA. Now, the other thing I think you were working up to is it's also that election in 1988 when, lo and behold, the governor of New Hampshire, John Sununu, brings electronic voting machines into the primaries for the very first time. The Danaher machines in was in Manchester, where the former CIA director does very well on these non-transparent push-and-pray voting machines. And the original name of those machines was Shooptronics, but Mr. Shoop had been twice convicted of essentially election tampering and other charges in the Philadelphia area. So we wonder why we were using this guy's machines.
Bob, I remember this election because I had been asked to be general counsel to the Dole campaign in Ohio. Paul Gilmore had been my client since I went into private practice in 1980, and he was the co-chairman of the Dole for President campaign in Ohio in 1988, along with Joanne Davidson. So I was following this, and what I remember was that the George Herbert Walker Bush made the pledge of no new taxes, which there's right. a tradition in New Hampshire, and the impression I had was that John Sununu, the governor, had told told George Herbert Walker Bush, if you want to win the primary here, take the pledge. And he did, and Bob Dole didn't, and that's what I thought was the explanation for the George Herbert Walker Bush walking away with it. And it was only after the 2004 election, when we were at one of the forums that you had organized, a gentleman named O'Neill gave me the book on the 1988 election, which explained this technological innovation that was really behind this switch. But the pattern is documented, and the interesting thing about it is that it's not what John Simon was talking about, where you're pre-adjusting and the reason for losing some elections is that they adjusted it based upon what they thought the margin would be that they would need, and then some events come about that change the dynamics of the race and so they lose. What it suggests, based upon what Charnin's analysis is that there is sort of an agreed handicap. So the Rove is not going to steal more than whatever it is, 5-6 points. So you, as the Democratic candidate, know if you're
and by stealing that, he's really shifting it. So it's really about 10 points, right? Because if you steal 5 from the other side, they're losing 5, you're gaining 5. So
yeah, but the point is that in the 92 election, Clinton, who wins the election, actually won by a much larger margin. So the 5 or 6 point handicap was in play, but Clinton won by a large enough margin to overcome that handicap. And also the same is true with President Obama. In the 2008 race, he won by a landslide, and he overcame a 5-6 point whatever it is handicap.
And by that we refer to that as the red shift.
Yes,
and that's really a unexplained vote for the Republican Party, that the exit polls, people walking out of the exit polls, randomly chosen, representative of the population, accurate, you know, usually within one percentage point, are saying they voted differently, and the Republicans are picking up essentially 5% more than they should. And the listener should know that when we talk about adjusting the polls, that is nothing more than saying whatever the machines say, whatever the, you know, blind faith, non-transparent machines report, we'll take that as the actual vote, not what people are saying in one of the most scientific and accurate polls imaginable, the exit polls.
Correct. And what you and I and others who, a good movie that people should see is Dorothy Fadiman's movie, which focuses on this idea that in an age of electronic voting, that it's the exit polls that are your most reliable indication of what the actual vote is, not the reported vote. Now, before the advent of the, you know, electronic voting coming in full tilt, with the DREs and so on, they were manipulating votes in different ways by tampering with the chads on the punch card ballots. And when that became sort of an issue or publicized in the 2000 election, they blamed it on an inherent flaw in the technology, as though this was not an expensive technology, and it was inherently something that happens because people don't push down hard enough or whatever, when in fact they were tampering. Organized crime folks were doing their part to tamper with the chads, to calibrate the chads so that they would when they ran through the tabulator, it would come off in the presidential race, and right. And this would cause the overvote or undervote.
Well, this is either a sharp cut or a dull cut, right? When they're cutting that little space for you to punch out the chad, they can cut it in a way where it's hard for it to cut out, say for a Democrat, or they can cut it in a way where it will virtually fall out naturally when being counted for, say, George W. Bush.
Right, or if it will fall out. So that for the Republicans, so that if you cast your vote for the Democrat, it won't count because it'll be an overvote.
Right, yeah, an overvote in which there were very high numbers in 2000 and 2004 in Ohio, but really 2000 in Florida, overvotes or undervotes. And another thing we know they did with the chads, of course, you can make them hard to punch out, but in many of those machines, they never took them out, so it was virtually impossible to punch through. But where's the proof come that, because I've talked to people on this, one guy in particular, saying, look, you can cut that chad so it just naturally will fall out for your candidate of choice. That's been studied?
The 2004 election was quite interesting because of the work of our colleague Susan Truitt.
Truitt.
And the Case Ohio, and the work of Senator Fetter, Ohio Senator Fetter. They held off the introduction of the DRE machines. The plan had been to have DRE machines very much a part of that system, so we had a lot of punch card ballots. So in the manipulation of that election,
about 84% of Ohio was counted by punch card.
So in the manipulation of that election, my understanding is that yes, they had the program. They had the programs, the algorithms for the computer programs, in terms of creating the right margin that they mm-hmm. wanted. And if you recall, the right margin, they didn't want a repeat of Florida. They wanted to have a large margin. They didn't want a repeat of Florida in regard to the popular vote going one way and the electoral vote going the other. So they were cheating in California, rich in popular votes that could be stolen, and wouldn't be missed because it wouldn't change
It's a blue state. You can do a little shaving there.
Mm-hmm. and it wouldn't be as noticeable. People wouldn't raise a ruckus about it. But both the popular vote and the other, the electoral votes were manipulated.
This is WCRS Community Radio, 98.3, 102.1. You're listening to The Other Side of the News. Cliff, you were saying before the break.
Yeah, Bob, we had these punch card ballots in 2004, and so the manipulation, while guided by the computer program saying here's how you manipulate things to get the result, they had to implement that manipulation by manipulation of the punch card ballots. So when we saved the ballots from destruction, they were sitting in the Secretary of State's office. Dan Rather Reports had done a report on the punch card ballots and the flaws in the paper in the 2000 election, and they came to Ohio, requested permission to do an analysis of the Ohio ballots, and they found that there were the calibration on the punch cards had been tampered with, that they were defective. And the story never ran for reasons I don't know. But what it suggests is that the reason that hundreds of thousands of these ballots, these unused
ballots never cast,
that were destroyed.
Which was
why were they destroyed? Because particularly in Montgomery County, they must have been that must have been the major technique, and they were afraid that it would be become evident, and it would show that those ballots had been calibrated to create overvotes and so on in a tremendous volume. So they were all destroyed. All the ballots in Montgomery County were destroyed. And there were many unused ballots in other counties that were destroyed. And this is the reason that I believe that the current Secretary of State is under orders or instructions to try to get everything destroyed.
And what do you mean by that? That's related to the King Lincoln case?
Yes. The King Lincoln case, as you recall, was a case. The original purpose of that case was to preserve the ballots beyond the mandatory 22-month retention period, and we were successful. We had many successes in that case, but one of the most important was to preserve the ballots. Had they not been preserved, that study by the Dan Rather Reports organization using the paper expert that did the work for the FBI on the Unabomber case. He was with one that was working the machine. They had a machine that IBM had to do the testing, and that work would not have been done.
Where does the case stand now?
Well, the case stands now a temporary holding pattern. Because the federal court has dismissed the case for lack of jurisdiction. We have issued a document hold notice to the state of Ohio that we will be filing a racketeering case under the Ohio Corrupt Practices Act, and therefore wanted them to know that. We believe that the unused ballots and other ballots are should be preserved as evidence in that case. So we are in the process of assembling our legal team, drafting our complaint, assembling our expert team, assembling our plaintiff team to come in with a case. And it's quite important, I believe, that this case get filed, and that we seek appropriate injunctive relief so that we will affect the integrity of the 2012 election, because the intent, there's no doubt, based upon the pattern, the long-going pattern, that the intent is to not just flood the airwaves with the corporate money, secret corporate money, defaming the Democratic candidates for the Senate and the President and so forth, but also to have this handicap in play so that the there's a very substantial likelihood, with all that in play, that the Republican candidates will win, not actually win, but win by the application of the handicap.
Many people suggest that in 2004 there may have been some tampering with what John Kerry's wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, called the motherboards or the central tabulators, or there was even more obvious manipulation going on in the so-called recount, where people from Triad, owned by the Rapp family, very hardcore Republican family, went around and brought patches for the software prior to the recount. Is that factual?
Yes. And we were, you know, we were getting advice at the, back at, you know, after the election from sources that from intelligence sources telling us, here's the name of the company that did this, and here's the name of the company that did that. One of the companies that was, we were told, that was involved in manipulating tabulators was doing so remotely. And so yes, the Rapp family was implicated in the changing out hard drives, which our expert Stephen Spoonmore said this is a clear indication of fraudulent manipulation.
And there's affidavits, as I recall, Cheryl Eaton, a Hocking County election official who supplied an affidavit to the Judiciary Committee, Representative John Conyers, about the switching out of the hard drive in Hocking County.
Right. And the thing I wanted to say, Bob, about this 2004, I would say most people would probably say, well, these guys are nuts. These people are saying this was a stolen election. The FBI would have caught them if you know, the FBI would be saying, hey, let's do something about this. Or the John Kerry would be saying, do something about this. Or the Democratic Party. And it's just Bob Fitrakis and Cliff Arnebeck and a few others and saying that there's a problem. And, you know, the truth is that John Conyers, along with others, formally requested an FBI investigation. An FBI investigation commenced. And lo and behold, a new character comes on the scene named Stanley Borgia, who established a rapport with Karl Rove.
Not going back to the Borgia family.
I don't know if it's any relationship.
But it's scary.
We'll have to check ancestor.com. But anyway, Stanley Borgia comes on the scene just in time to be the agent in charge, special agent in charge of the Cincinnati office, which says we've no evidence of any federal crime. Now, I know personally that they gathered evidence of a federal crime because they were in the room in Claremont County where Richard Phillips and I were there looking at the boxes of thousands of remade optical scan ballots. And I asked, well, why did you do this? And, well, it seemed like a good idea at the time, and it was bipartisan. You know, there was a Republican and a Democrat doing it. It made no sense. It was a clear indication of massive fraud. And that was only one of the many, many pieces of evidence. That investigation was closed down as a courtesy to the president, Karl Rove, telling Stanley Borgia, Stan, this just wouldn't be the good time, you know, with us about to have elections in Iraq, with us about to go into battle in Fallujah. We don't want to dignify these accusations of a fraudulent election on the part of the President of the United States in a time of war, dignify it by having the FBI saying, hey, it looks like there's something here. We have to continue this investigation.
Well, you're suggesting two things here, that Karl Rove has enough influence to have the FBI do his political bidding in certain cases. Is there any proof of that?
Certainly is. You know, look at the, and he's been investigated for this, to the credit of President George W. Bush. There were two criminal investigations of Karl Rove during the Bush administration. He was fired from the White House in August of 2007. Because of the accusations that had been made, some of which I haven't talked about. Jill Simpson, who had formerly worked for Karl Rove, came forward to the House Judiciary Committee, came forward to 60 Minutes, and indicated that Karl Rove was implicated in the misuse of the Justice Department to prosecute Governor Siegelman in Alabama. And this was known, and this was Joe Simpson was a highly credible person with the Bush White House. Karl Rove lost his job, and then there were two prosecutions, or two investigations for purposes of prosecution, one over the Wilson plane.
The leaking of Valerie Plame.
Right, yeah. releasing Valerie Plame's name to the press.
Covert CIA operative.
Right, and then the other was the firing of the U.S. attorneys. And Rove would not voluntarily cooperate in answering questions, and because of that, there was a grand jury convened, and he was brought in before the grand jury to testify. The third investigation that should have taken place was, hey, Carl, by the way, have you been stealing elections since 1988? And that investigation did not get commenced either by the Bush administration or by the Obama administration, and that's the one that needs to take place.
Wasn't there a documentary made suggesting that Rove had gone after a lot of public officials, many even at the local and state level?
It's an incredible documentary. He went after lawyers who were of the caliber that might initiate class actions.
Of the caliber of Cliff Arnebeck, one of the best, not the lowly Bob Fitrakis.
I'm talking about Paul Miner, who organized the tobacco case for the state of Mississippi and led the interstate, multi-state litigation that resulted in a $250 billion judgment against the tobacco industry. I'm talking about Bill LaRocque in California, who was the leading class action lawyer, who at the time, last time I talked with his office, they were investigating the Enron money leaking into the election stealing operation. And next thing you know, he's in federal prison. Miner, LaRocque. And of course, everyone's familiar with the attack on Governor Spitzer of New York. Governor Spitzer was not attacked for a sexual indiscretion. He was attacked because he was the leading spokesperson for all the states of this country against the misuse of federal power to interfere with the state's investigation of the mortgage fraud that brought about the multi-trillion-dollar assault on the economy or the finances of the middle class of this country.
Talking to Cliff Arnebeck. We've got a few minutes left here. So you're suggesting that Karl Rove has a tremendous amount of power. Does he still have that power today?
He does. And I've recently heard someone say that he likes to be thought of as the comeback kid. And he was fired by George Herbert Walker Bush in 92. He was fired by George W. Bush in 2007. And yet he seems to come back. He comes back. It seems that the Republican Party, there are elements of the Republican Party that just think they can't win without him. And so he has this this special status, and he seems to have tremendous influence. And the plan is that this 2012 election will be the coup de grace of American democracy. And what happened in 2010 is this handicap that we've talked about, which had previously only been used in presidential and senatorial and congressional key congressional races, was extended throughout the country. And what was reported is this massive shift, an unprecedented massive shift of opinion and voting from Democrat to Republican, was in fact a reflection of the general application of this handicap across the board.
And do you think this happened in the Wisconsin recall?
Yes.
1 minute.
Yes, this happened, and that's the precursor to the presidential and senatorial election, where he intends that this will wrap it up. He'll take the presidency back. He'll take the control of the United States Senate back.
You've been listening to The Other Side of the News. This is Dr. Bob Fitrakis. I'd like to thank Cliff Arnebeck, attorney at law, for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Bob.
Remember that you need to get all these perspectives, and you might want to go to thefreepress.org. I've just written a column suggesting that if election rigging prosper, none dare call it election rigging. Thanks for listening. This is Dr. Bob Fitrakis bringing you the other side of the news.